Welcome back to another episode of the Marketing Mindset Podcast, where we believe that in order to grow a successful business, you need just two things, the right marketing strategies and the right mindset. I am your host, Maria Benz, and I am the founder of MBM Agency, a digital marketing company who helps service-based businesses grow their revenue using online strategies. And I am here to share with you all of my tips and pointers every single week when it comes to digital marketing and business growth. Today's episode is sponsored by our premium Wix templates. If you're totally stumped on how to build your own website, but can't afford to hire a designer, that does not mean that you should skip out on the important things in the process like professional design, sales formula copywriting, and search engine optimization. Our premium Wix website templates are created with marketing and sales in mind. And the best part is that you can have a professional looking and functional website in just under 24 hours. Our website templates are completely stress-free. They're easy to use, so that means no Photoshop or coding required. They are designed to convert based on our signature homepage formula, and they are ready to launch as soon as you are done designing. So if you want to check this out, get it at mbmagency.com/shop and use the discount code MINDSET to get 30% off. All right, guys, welcome back to another episode. Today I have Elena Favaro-Viana with me here today. I am so excited to chat all things legal. So Elena is a lawyer, entrepreneur, and an overachiever. Starting her career in international criminal law, she has worked with the United Nations in Cambodia and at the International Criminal Court in the Netherlands, defending individuals accused of crimes against humanity and genocide. After several years abroad, Elena found her passion. Elena opened up her own virtual practice focusing on business law for online entrepreneurs. She also offers business mentorship with a more holistic approach combining business and legal. So welcome to the show. Super excited to have you here.
As you were reading my bio, I realized, oh my goodness, what a mouthful.
I know, so many big words.
Sorry.
You're fine. Gosh, reading this, I was like, that sounds so interesting. Defending people about crimes against humanity in the Netherlands and Cambodia. Like, before we even get started, tell me about that life. That sounds like, I don't know, like, you know, not your different. Typical lifestyle that you hear about. Yeah.
You know, it was really different. I started this path to become a lawyer, always with the idea of being a diplomat. That was like my biggest goal in life for as long as I can remember. And I actually got, you know, after law school, I got my first big break, one would say. And it was with the United Nations in Cambodia. And so they were literally like, you got it. I applied 8 months before, fully forgot about the application. And then they messaged me and they're like, hey, you have it. Like, can you move to Cambodia in 2 weeks?
Wow.
And I was like, okay. So I just remember like, I was at a yoga conference of all things. And I was like, oh my gosh, I got to get my shot. I got to book a flight. Like, I don't know how to do this. But I ended up moving straight to Cambodia. And then I worked, with the judges. I worked under the international judges on crimes against humanity and genocide. So that was really, really interesting working on the Khmer Rouge trials. And that was really like my first experience with international criminal law. And I fell in love. And so I pursued that path. And then I ended up getting another position at the International Criminal Court. But this time I was working for the defense of a president from Africa. I won't say who, but I was working on his defense team for things that he was accused of. He ended up going away for free, not for free, innocent. He was found innocent.
Okay.
So that was a really exciting time, actually. But working on those kind of cases was interesting. I found the work really, really interesting.
Yeah, I bet. So how old were you when you got your first big break?
Good question. I was 25.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it was, 25.
Gosh. And like dealing, I'm like, I don't know how much you can go into, how much you could say, but I'm like, so working with this, like, was it, I could imagine, like, was it like a lot of big
people that you're working with, kind of?
It was. So at the International Criminal Court, the level of, it's obviously the main international criminal court for the world. It's based in The Hague in the Netherlands. So any crime against humanity, war crime, act of genocide is meant to be tried at this international criminal court. So really anything that you can think of that's happened quite poorly in the world, eventually, you know, the idea is quite an idealistic court. You know, we can get into it, but most people end up there. So it was really, really interesting to actually even visit like the United Nations prison, which is a completely different building there in The Hague as well. It was an amazing experience. And of course, we had so many ministers. So I'm Canadian. So we had so many ministers from Canada were traveling to the International Criminal Court. We're having conventions there. And so any given Thursday, it was always on Thursdays, there was always some kind of like wine and cheese event. So as I would leave my little office, and Maria, it was honestly like Mission Impossible. Like they had to scan my hand as I entered and exited the building. It was so cool. But every time I would leave, there would always be some convention and you could just walk in and network with all of these really amazing, impressive, and powerful people. So I absolutely loved it. It was honestly a dream for me. But you're probably wondering why I'm not doing that anymore.
Yeah. We have so many questions.
But working in international criminal law and working with the United Nations or any big body like this, there's not a lot of job security. So as a woman, you're asked to move constantly.
Got it.
So I did it for about, in the end, it was 4 years. Okay. And I was working in all these different areas. And I noticed that I had to keep moving. You had to try something new. You always had to be somewhere else. And I was going to conventions all over the world. I went to conventions in Turkey and Qatar. Like, it was honestly beautiful. But then I met my current partner, and I think, you know, we were talking a little bit before this podcast. When you meet somebody, all of a sudden your perspective changes, right? Do I want to build a family in this kind of life, or do I want to have children in this kind of life? And honestly, it's a blessing and a curse for women. I don't think men think like this at all, but for women, you think all of a sudden, okay, no. I made so many decisions that have taken me down this path. I need to start making different decisions to take me down, I guess, my next chapter. And now I'm 30 years old, and I don't know, there's something to be said about not living out of a backpack anymore and actually having nice sheets, right?
Yeah. I totally get that. That totally makes sense. And like Elena said, like her and I were talking about prior to the podcast about us moving to Georgia. It was, you know, we started looking at life differently, started looking at like, what kind of family do we want to raise? Like looking at the future, you look at things so much, so differently. So, and like, we're going to get into the topic of the episode, but I'm like a few more questions about your personal life, because it's so interesting to me. One, do you still want to be a diplomat?
Yes.
Love it.
I do. I don't know if it's going to happen. Maybe. You never know.
Never say that. Yeah. You're still young. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like that's one of those things that can definitely happen later in life, or some kind of, we'll see. If anybody wants to give me a job, I mean, let me know.
what would be like your ideal role as that? What would you be doing?
You know, not so much. So diplomat, you work on behalf of your country, and they place you in a different country for 3 months at an embassy. So you're really playing more of an ambassadorial role.
Okay.
So I think it's actually shifted a little bit to working for maybe an international organization that where you need to negotiate with other international players in order to move some kind of agenda forward. So whatever it is meant to like better humanity of some level.
Yeah.
So that would be something I would love to eventually do. Maybe join some kind of task force, or maybe join some kind of project team that's, you know, working towards something that I strongly believe in.
Yeah.
It's all off the cards, not off the table, and we'll see.
Yeah, I love that. Is like so cool. I know, that is so cool to me, because like, I don't know, that's like, it's just not what you would typically hear, you know what I mean, from people. That's like so fascinating to me. One more question. I'm like, this might be like a little downer question, but I'm just so curious.
Ask away.
So dealing with crimes against humanity, when you're seeing these cases pop up, were you just like, you know, have you?
It's hard.
Start losing faith in humanity, like hearing some of these things? Like, I can only imagine.
I think that was, this is probably going to make me sound awful, but that is half of the appeal. Wanting, you know, working in law, it's so much more exciting to read a horror story as a case than it is to read about maybe some kind of tax merger acquisition, sorry. But it is, there is a shock that happens, but you do, unfortunately, you become desensitized to it.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of the work, especially when I was in Cambodia, a lot of the work we had to do at that court was actually compare what had been happening in Bosnia as well, the whole crisis that happened there in the early 90s. So the brutality of the levels that were happening there versus what had happened in Cambodia in the 70s and cross-comparing them. And so we did a lot of that. So studying wars and studying brutality is a part of it. And it is difficult to stomach. It is difficult to see to other humans and trying to understand why to stop that from happening. But the one thing I did learn, and this is kind of why you keep humanity like at the forefront, is that each culture and each country and each war is so different in how they actually handle things. Even the level of torture is completely different. And so, which is really interesting in a way. I mean, if you're into that, I guess.
Well, I feel like even going back to like, just, I feel like, you know, crime, true crime is so popular because I think everyone is so interesting. Like, I'm like literally sitting here listening like, oh my gosh, like I'm about to grab some popcorn.
I mean, if you want to go pop some, I'll wait. Anybody can pause the podcast to go get some popcorn. Come on right back. But no, it was really, really exciting. And it was really interesting. And I think one of the most important, you know, for me, even in Cambodia, I actually got to shake the hand of a man who was on trial for genocide, for, you know, for literally the man responsible for the murders of over a million people. Wow. And to shake that person's hand, the one thing, the first thought was like, oh, he's so cute. He's so little. And that's so stupid because, and then you realize, gosh, evil isn't real. It's just something that happens. It doesn't define a person. A person is so many more things than the things that they do. And you start to get really confused about, you know, wrong versus right. But you really realize that every single person is doing what they believe is right. Wrong and right are completely subjective. And so when you actually understand that there is no wrong and there is no right, then we're able to actually have healthier debates and we're able to actually move education forward. And so the beauty of the law, and to maybe bring it back to the topic a little bit, is in law, we're always looking not at what's right versus wrong, but we're looking at what the reasonable man would think. So we look at the collective and we're like, what do the majority think about this topic? Right? Like, do we all think this is good? Do we not think this is good? And then understanding from there, okay, well, if we all think this is bad, then maybe we shouldn't do that. And that's like the idea of having like a living, breathing law. And that's why we have Supreme Courts in order to have these kind of decisions to move things forward, even though it's a very long, arduous process.
This is like so interesting to me. I'm like, if you're ever in town, we got to grab coffee. I'm going to be asking so many questions.
100%. 100%. I always drive down through Atlanta, actually. Well, through Georgia, at least, because I go to Florida a lot and we road trip quite a bit.
My gosh, you have to let me know. That's probably a really long drive.
Like 18 hours. Yeah, it takes a couple of days. So
going into, you have this amazing, interesting life, and then you decided to pivot kind of based on where you saw your life going, where you wanted to have your future. So how has it been starting your new business? Because a lot of people listening to this podcast, we have a audience that is either just starting their business, they're brand new, they're, you know, they need all the tips and advice, they love hearing stories, or we also have people that have had their businesses but they're just getting into the online space. So just so you know, kind of our audience. Absolutely. But how has it been leaving that and starting your own thing? I'm sure that was a little bit scary.
Yeah, so I mean, probably just like all of your listeners before, as you know, interesting as it sounded, I was an employee. Okay. Mm-hmm. All of us at some point were an employee. So making the jump from employee to entrepreneur, to business owner, to managing and founding my own law firm, like all of that is really, really scary. And so, you know, all your listeners who are pivoting to the online space or who are starting a business, you know, I went through that as well. It doesn't matter how much knowledge or how experienced or all these other things that have happened. Running a business is really its own adventure, its own roller coaster. And I say this too, in law school, we're taught to be lawyers, but we're not taught to be business owners. So even running a virtual practice, there's the business side, which I feel like, yeah, I'm finally getting a handle on it. But then there's the whole law firm side, and it's actually all the regulations that you need to follow for your law society. So there's, you know, and other professionals will probably, you know, understand that as well. There's like all these rules and you're like, oh gosh. So I can definitely relate to all of your listeners in the fact that starting is really scary. But when it comes to the legal, I know that that particularly is something we avoid. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that's either A, super scary, or B, we spend more hours than we want to Googling it and mm-hmm. then we don't really get to a good conclusion. Or C, it's just not so sexy. So we're kind of like, well, we'll do it later.
Yeah, right? I can relate to that.
And it doesn't have to be like that. I mean, obviously I'm super biased, but getting legally protected and understanding what you need will not only better you as a CEO, because you're going to understand mm-hmm. the skills you need to be a CEO, and legal is one of them, mm-hmm. But it's also going to help you sleep better at night. Because if you want to grow a business and you want to scale and you maybe want to take on more clients, you want to, one, appear a professional, right? Like, you want to mm-hmm. put that white glove service, that like real customer experience, and be like, absolutely, here's my proposal, my contract, and my invoice. Send it off and you know, really match the price tag you're putting out there with the service you're giving it. And unfortunately, legal is a part of that. And so it's kind of this whole experience.
Yeah. So I know, so important. A lot of people avoid it, but let's get into the five contracts that every entrepreneur needs. I loved when you discussed this at the Abundant Entrepreneur Summit, because the way you presented it made it seem like so, just like, I had like, okay, this is not as complicated as it sounds. Like, the way you explained it was so, so good. So what is the first contract that every entrepreneur needs? Or I guess maybe let's list them out and then we'll kind of dive deeper.
Yeah. So there are five contracts every online business owner on an entrepreneur needs. Okay. Mm-hmm. Number one is the client contract. Okay. We're going to go into it. Number two, and this is my favorite, is the media release form. And number three is your website terms and conditions. Number four is your website privacy policy. And number five is your website disclaimer. Mm-hmm. So three of them really relate to your website. I consider them your package, just your website protection package. And the other two, your client contract and your media release. And let's go through each one. So your first one is your client contract. This is the bread and butter of your entire online business. It's either called a client contract, it can be a service agreement, whatever it is, it's you giving a service to somebody else. Okay, however that looks, you need a contract to outline that service. Mm-hmm. This is not a contract that you can just have as a hand-me-down. I see this all the time. People get hand-me-downs from coaches or friends. No, don't do that. Or you kind of DIY and hack it yourself, which is, you know, good to a certain extent. But the problem with hacking it yourself is you don't know what you don't know, right?
Yeah.
So you put everything that you want to do in there, but you have no idea what you need to cover yourself for. That's not happening.
Could I ask you, like, what are some things that people need to be covered, but they don't necessarily think of it to put it into their contract?
So one, for example, is the first one that comes to mind is severability. It is almost a boilerplate clause, but it basically says that if your entire contract, let's say one clause is void, let's say that's just like not legal or it doesn't really apply, that it does not void the rest of your contract.
Okay.
So really dramatic example. Let's say, and this is a dramatic example, not true, but let's say in your business, you completely copyrighted all of your website templates, ripped them off from somebody else, right? And as part of like your packages, you like gave this template, okay? Somebody may come to you and be like, well, the contract says that you wouldn't do any kind of copyright infringement. You've done it. Therefore, pay me everything back. I want a full refund. So the severability clause kicks in and is like, okay, well, while the one clause that says, yeah, you shouldn't have done the copyright infringement is kind of void, it does not cancel out the other one that says you don't give a refund.
Got it. Does that make sense? Yes.
So
yes.
That's just like a one dramatic example, but it plays out in so many different ways. Another thing you want to consider in your client agreement is you want to really outline all the things you do offer. So everything you offer, but also everything you do not offer.
Okay.
You really want to manage the expectations. So you want to say, yes, I offer like a business, like for me, I'll give you an example. I also do business mentorship. In my business mentorship contract, I say, this is everything you get as part of coaching, but you do not get any legal services. Right. Okay. So I really make sure that the two are separate, and that may be the case for lots of other people that are like, I'll help you do all that, but I'm not about to create graphics for you. Or maybe a branding strategist doesn't want to help create, doesn't actually do your social media management. So things that are kind of paired similar, but you're like, well, no, if you want that package, either I offer it somewhere else in a different, you know, setting, or I just don't offer it altogether. So this is really your chance to like build out your dream relationship with your client and basically say, this is everything and make sure you follow it all. And so you want to put your refund policies, rescheduling, how many times can somebody get revisions from you?
Right? Yeah, I had to learn that the hard way, like, because I definitely, when I first started, was kind of like hacking myself, and I had nothing about revisions, nothing. And it's like, why? Why didn't I think of this? I'm a website designer. And
yeah, especially for your business.
I know. One client gave me a run for my money.
And they do.
And after that, I was like, oh my God. But yeah, now I have revisions in there. But this is why you need to work with a lawyer, because you're going to tell me things that I'm not thinking of, or like I may forget, you know what I mean? So I love that.
My job is to actually work through every worst case scenario with you and understand how you want to handle that bad case. That's It's like, how many revisions do you actually want? Okay, cool. Or maybe you have a group coaching program or a coaching program and it's like 6 calls over 6 weeks. But somebody's like, great, I have 6 calls and I'll spread them out over a year and then just use all the additional support for a year. And it's like, no.
No,
Mary, that's not how it works. I'm sorry if any of your listeners are called Mary.
That's funny. Okay. Number 2, media release. And this is so important.
Okay. Media release form is my favorite contract for online businesses. When you have an online business, the idea is that you own everything part of your business.
Yeah.
Okay. So the media release form, basically it's somebody else that gives you a piece of content and they're also giving ownership of the content to you. Okay. So in a practical example, video testimonials. Okay. Somebody sending you a video testimonial, you're super excited.
Yeah.
It's like a 5-minute video testimonial. And then you want to crop it to fit your 15-second Instagram story.
Yeah.
Well, you're not allowed to do that because they didn't tell you that, they didn't give you permission to do that. And also, what if the testimonial said something like, oh, Elena smelled really bad and Elena was late to every call, but Elena had a great smile, but I would never work with Elena again. And I just crop it and now you all think I have a great smile, right? So, like, for example, you can be technically misrepresenting what somebody else is saying about you because they still own it. They've just given it to you almost on loan to be like, yeah, of course you can use this to promote this one specific program that you have that I was a part of.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, if you get them to sign the media release form, you own it 100%. It's yours. So you can use it today, tomorrow, 5 years from now, you can use it for any program you want. And this is really, really beneficial because if you're using it to promote maybe a group program that you have or a passive course that goes on and makes millions of dollars, you don't want that person that gave you that testimonial to come back to you and be like, hey, Maria, like I am the one that basically I'm the poster child of your whole course. Like I want a commission or I want royalties.
Right?
You can be like, well, no, actually, because I own this, so I'm using it within my rights. So
that makes sense.
That's just one example. Another perfect example is podcasts, right? You want to own my voice to be in this podcast, to use how you want. So that's another really good example where you would have a media release form that I would sign off on, which gives you full ownership over what I've said. So now you can go and you can create an audiogram to promote this, or you can use this podcast, or maybe you can use the recording and make, I don't know, an IGTV out of it. But you want to be able to own those things yourself in your business. So the media release form is really like hands down, you need it for an online business. I mean, if you're a hairstylist, I don't see how you would need it. Somebody comes for a trim, they leave, it's fine. But with the online business, because we're only working with content, you really want that.
That makes total sense. Because we're constantly like either, like right now podcasting, or like you said, posting on Instagram, reposting on Instagram, post like showcasing a lot of things. So that makes a lot of sense. Okay. And then the last three, website protection package. Love this. Let's get into it.
So if you have an online business, you need to have what I refer to as almost your like brick and mortar, your store online. And this is your website. So this is something I know you deal with all the time in your business, website creation. So you need to have website protection policies. These are the three little policies that live at the footer of your website. So the terms and conditions sometimes has a different name. Okay. It's all kind of the same. But you do need to have a separate link for each one. So the footer of the website, it needs to say terms and conditions where you can click on it. One that says privacy policy where you can click on it. And the other one's a disclaimer where you can click on it. All three. The terms and conditions is basically telling users how they can or cannot use the information on your website. So it's explaining what your business is. People can't just come copy and paste your entire website and throw it on their own. It's also explaining what your business does. So if you're selling any products through your website, any digital products, physical products, digital products, you want to basically put a copyright protection in there as well, like intellectual property. For physical products, you want to outline your shipping details, right? Shipping and handling, refunds, anything like that. You want to all put that in your terms and conditions. So this also extends to your social media if you wanted to.
Okay.
So posting on Instagram, how do we protect Instagram posts? This is one way how to do it. So you actually have to put specifically in your thing that in your terms and conditions that it also encompasses all of your social media managed like marketing branches as well. So this is your terms and conditions. It's like the bread and butter of kind of your business online. Then you have your privacy policy. This is the privacy policy is your legally required document. Okay. If you do not have this, you are against the law. You need so to crazy. Have this on your website. Yes, it is. So you have in the United States, there is a regulation coming out of California, the CALOPA, which is the California Online like Protection Policy. I'm not sure what the acronym is right now. I'm so sorry, but it's
okay.
And basically what this says is that you need to have a privacy policy on your website. And a privacy policy is going to tell the user how you're using their cookies, any email you're getting, right? So if we're getting email registrations or any payment information, you're basically saying, you give us your information. We're going to protect it. We're going to put it under a little virtual lock and key filing cabinet. And only the members of this team specifically are going to have access to it. And if you don't want us to have your information, you can email us here to kind of get rid of it. So this is the legally required one. Under American like legislation, but also under European legislation.
Okay.
So in Canada, if I have users from either the United States or Europe coming to my website, I'm also legally required to have it.
Got it.
The United States is one of the biggest markets in the world.
Yeah.
Makes sense?
Yes. And then, so last one is the disclaimer, right?
The disclaimer. So unlike the privacy policy, this one is not legally required. It's highly, highly recommended. So the disclaimer is basically telling people that all of the information on your website is information and educational only, and it's not advice. The same thing is if you have a program that where you guarantee like somebody, I don't know, like if you're a fitness trainer and you guarantee somebody will lose 30 pounds in 30 days, once again, it's just marketing. You're not guaranteeing results. Even some of the testimonials, you're going to say that this is basically just your best case scenario. Not everybody is guaranteed these results. And you're going to outline any disclaimers that you need to outline in there that are specific and customized to your business in order to protect yourself as much as possible.
That makes sense. So This is like, I think the people listening, just hearing these little tidbits, like, I think they'll immediately understand why these are so important. But let's say, what are the consequences of if someone doesn't have these on their website?
So if you do not have the privacy policy, the legally required one, you can be fined. There is actually a hotline in the United States, I know. And so you can be reported on and you can be fined a monetary value. So it really depends on the offense. So you do want to have that on there. You know, you're running a business. It's, you know, you just want to get all your ducks in a row.
Yeah.
The consequences of not having the other legal documents is you're just completely exposed. You just have no protection. There's nothing that you can fall back on, because even though these contracts are living at the bottom of your website, by virtue of somebody clicking on your website and using it, or like, you know, engaging with your content, they have agreed to it, even though they didn't sign it. So the contract is still legally binding, because you have made it easily accessible for them to click at the bottom of your website. Right? That's why it has to be easily accessible. It has to be laid out, because it's really up to them if they read it or not. Most of us don't read contracts. Does not mean that we are not bound by them. Mm-hmm. And so if anything goes wrong, let's say somebody does come and they completely rip off one of your testimonials and put it on their own, or they just take word for word everything you wrote about your product, you can now be like, well, listen, like, my contract says this, you're not allowed to do that. And if it ever gets to a case where you need to go forward to sue them or take them to court, you actually have legal cause, because you're like, this protection was on my website at the date of the alleged offense. Here it is. This is what it says. Like, they're not allowed to do that. And so you will always have cause. And this is the same with all of your agreements, especially your client contract. What ends up happening, and there will always be that one client. We will always have a bad client. And when they come to you and they want to do something that you don't want, that's completely against your contract. So for example, refunds is a big one. Your contract outlines your refund policy. They want something more than what's outlined. You can honestly be like, listen, client, like, you and I, we both agreed to this. This is out of my hands. Like, this is the law. Like, this is above both of us, right? You can like refer to a higher power, and it's not your fault as the business owner. You're kind of like, well, I also agreed to this, so I can't really break it, can I?
So let's say if someone has a contract, but they don't have anything about refunds, and a client comes and is like mad about the service, whatever it may be, and demands a refund, if that client went to go sue, would they win because it wasn't in the contract?
So the legal answer is it depends, always. There's no black and white answer. It depends on how much evidence you have to support that.
Okay.
So if you don't have a contract, but let's say you have a bunch of screenshots saying, I don't do refunds, or you have a bunch of emails that it's like, okay, great, it's $100, no refunds upfront. If you have a bunch of, you know, digital screenshots to support it, that's going to help you.
Okay.
But it's a lot of he said, she said situation. Okay.
So better be protected.
Always.
Yeah.
It's better to just lay it all out. Because what ends up happening, I mean, even something so simple like rescheduling, like give me 24 hours notice, right? Some people don't. Mm-hmm. And maybe they'll give you like 1 minute notice. And now you and your business, like, you've actually lost an opportunity cost there. It's an hour of your time. That's pretty much like, well, what am I going to do with it now?
Yeah.
That could be a money generating activity. And so when we're thinking as new online entrepreneurs, we're thinking quite small, unless you're in Texas. I feel like Texas. I think you're thinking small. You're like, oh, well, it's just an hour. And it's like, well, no. The larger you get, the bigger you become, the more you scale, that hour really means a lot. Yeah. And here's the best part, and I've seen this time and time again, is people think, oh, I'll just do the legal later when I get a few more clients or when I make more money. No, why?
Yeah.
Those clients, you know, in the online world, you have the tendency to scale really, really fast. You can make lots of money really, really quickly. So in 2 years from now, when you're a multimillionaire, you know, if all goes well, those clients at the beginning that didn't have contracts, they can, you know, they have every right to ask for things. Like, they can always come back and haunt you. So you really want to be protected from day one, from your very first client, even if your business hasn't made any money yet. unfortunately, the legal is one of those investments. The day you register your domain is the day you should be registering your business and getting everything covered.
Yeah, I love it. Like, better be safe than sorry. Better be protected. Because like Elena said, there's always that one client that you don't expect. They're great in the very beginning. And then you don't ever want to be in a situation where you're stuck and you're just like, wow, I wish I just took the time to do it correctly. So say if someone's listening and they're like, oh my gosh, I don't have any of this. Like, what can they do? How can they work with you? And how can they connect with you online?
I love that. Honestly, if you're listening, you're freaking out, don't worry. I'm here to make it easy for you. So I live mostly on my Instagram, which is at Where Did She Go Now, which is kind of like a tribute to where I was like always moving around. So it's at Where Did She Go Now. You can message me there. I offer free 15-minute consultations where we can talk through your business and kind of see what's right for you. The number one thing I want to say, and maybe I got it across, maybe I didn't, is that I want to empower you. I want you to feel like the CEO that you are. And I want you to feel like no matter how small you are, you're big enough for a legal department. Like, you're big enough to get a lawyer and to make that not so scary. So I want you to be able to just message and let's see if I can help you, right?
Yes. So are people able to work with you one-on-one? Like, say for contracts, do you work with them one-on-one?
Yeah. So I do customize contracts. Okay, cool. So when you come, we can write up a proposal based on what you need. And I can quote you. And if you decide that that's right for you, then we can move forward. And then you will have me on your team to really carry out those services, get customized contracts that are geared specific to your business, because do not use hand-me-downs. I've seen hand-me-downs where people have, where like in different countries than they actually live in. No, it does not protect you.
So crazy.
Yeah. And then at the end, we go through the contract clause by clause so that you actually know what's in there so that you can feel really empowered by it. So you can sleep better at night because you're like, oh no, my terrible client ain't got nothing on me because we both signed this.
And how cool would it be like if someone says something like, let me check with my lawyer.
I get that all the time. People feel so legit. They're just like, hold on, I just need to get my contract back from my lawyer. And then they'll message me and say, Elena, like, I need this now. I'm like, okay. I'm like, good for you that you got a client. So you also get a cheerleader, right? I do run my own online business as well. And we are a completely virtual law firm. So I understand what you're going through.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for joining me for today's episode. I'm going to leave your links in the podcast show notes, and I'm going to outline these contracts as well so that the listeners can kind of take their notes and kind of start seeing what they need to kind of, you know, get their ducks in a row. So I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you so much.
This was so much fun. Thank you so much for having me.
If you've enjoyed this episode, please hit the subscribe button if you haven't already and leave us a review with your main takeaways from this episode. But thanks again for joining me today, and I will catch you next time on the Marketing Mindset Podcast.